And good morning, folks, and welcome to Coffee with the Radio Ranch Wranglers here on the Scriptures for America Worldwide Broadcasting Network. We're coming to you live this morning. We'll be right back right after this song. Stay tuned, folks.
There's a spirit in our land raising up the kind of man with a burning in his heart to be free. Like the preacher men of old, he can't be bought, he can't be sold. What did they preach? They preached liberty to a people who loved their liberty. Liberty to exercise all their God-given rights granted them at the time of their birth. The right to speak, bear arms and pray, worship God on land and say, from bad law we will keep our people free. We'll guard our liberty. They call the king into accounting for his disregard of law. Told their people not to yield before his threats. For God established rulers to protect the rights of man and ordained government to fit into his plan to maintain his people's liberty. Liberty to exercise all their God-given rights granted them at the time of their birth. The right to speak, bear arms and pray, worship God on land and say, from bad law we will keep our people free. Through the jury we'll guard our liberty. Such preacher men today to show our people the way to redeem their lost liberty. The bars of hell cannot prevail against one man who'll take a stand from the pulpit, expose tyranny and teach his people liberty. Liberty to exercise all their God-given rights granted them time of their birth. The right to speak, bear arms and pray, worship God on land and say, from bad law we will keep our people free. Through the jury we'll guard our liberty. Liberty to exercise all their God-given rights granted them at the time of their birth. The right to speak, bear arms and pray, worship God on. Jury says, not guilty, we choose to acquit. The state was wrong to charge him. This law is not fit for a people who love their liberty. For a people who will die for liberty.
And good morning once again, July 26, 2025. We welcome you out there. I'll bring the men on the line. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning.
And good morning, Will.
Good morning, guys.
And Tim, why don't you start us off with a word of prayer this morning?
Dear Lord and Heavenly Father, we just thank you for another opportunity to serve you. Lord, we know that each day is a gift. Lord, we thank you for it. Lord, we pray for your people. And we know that you created this world and everything in it. Lord, you own the cattle on a thousand. And the wealth and everyone. Lord, we know that it's going to go according to your plan, no matter what they. Lord, we just thank you for that. We thank you for that determination, that divine destination that you've created. Lord, we pray that you would let us with our own eyes see your enemies made your footstools. And Lord, see the undoing of the plans of the evil ones. Lord, see the blessings of your people and praise you for it. And Lord, that you would grant us understanding and wisdom as necessary in order to participate in your plan. Lord, we just pray for your people that you bless and keep them. that you would call them according to your purpose, and Lord, that you would grant this broadcast the ability to open eyes and minds and to be able to see the enemy's plans within plans. And Lord, that you'd grant us peace and understanding that the victory's already won. We're just privileged to see what's going on. We thank you for it, Lord. We ask all these things in Christ's name, and we thank you for his sacrifice on the cross for us. And we ask all these things, and we pray all these things, and we thank you for all these things. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Thank you, Tim. Appreciate that. You know, there is just so much stuff that's going on in the world right now, in the world, and, you know, starting a day off with a prayer like that, is definitely a good thing. You know, sometimes it's in the you know, just the hustle and bustle of, you know, getting up in the morning, trying to get going and everything like that. It's I just can't help but think that your day's going to go better with starting it off with a word of prayer.
It's certainly not going to make it worse, Jason.
I guarantee you that. Ooh. No, I've noticed that this week. I tried to spend extra amount of time in prayer this week, and you know, just you know, you pray, and sometimes you pray in one way, and you're really thinking that you're on track with the way God's going to work it out, and you're praying for something to happen, and He does it completely different, and it's like, but I mean, it at the same time, it's one of those things where it's like, wow, I never even saw that coming, and it was so much better than what we had envisioned or what, you know, we were simply thinking, that it just it makes you really feel small, and it makes me realize that we do serve a mighty and a just God.
Amen.
Well, there is a lot of things going on in the world. Where would you men like to start off this morning?
Go ahead, Will.
Well, I was just about to say dealer's choice, Tim. You go ahead and throw whatever on the table. So,
okay. Well,
you know, or, yeah, go for it, Tim. I'll defer to my elders. How about that?
Oh, yeah. Well, we have many things on the world markets going on right now that, you know, we need to be aware of. One of these things has been, of course, we kind of tie everything back to the land and the ag a lot of times here, because at heart, that's what we are. We're an agricultural society that God created, you know, and we enjoy doing those things. But there's some noise out there about Australia lifting bio restrictions on U.S. beef to use a tariff standoff that I thought was interesting. But we're seeing it's interesting to me, talking about the tariffs, that we're watching. There's some major changes coming in world trade markets due to these tariffs, and I think it's really epic. Well, we could change that. You know, they have that. It's like, and there's a lot of money coming into the United States as a result of these tariffs and of this, and a lot of benefits that are happening that they interest me. I mean, I'm watching with, it's definitely got me looking at it going, hey, this is a good thing. And, you know, basically, that was kind of God's plan all along. I mean, he said that in the Bible many times, that the strangers paid, the children didn't have to, you know. And when you look at that, we're seeing this, the proof of the pudding right there is in front of us as it's coming around. It's definitely an interesting situation.
You know, Tim, in regards to that, do you see long-term, I know there's a more, what would you say, healthy inflow coming from these products that we're sending and the products that are coming in as far as the tariffs, but do you think a long-term effect with this, do you think we'll start seeing the stuff that we do produce, you know, our corn, our wheat, our beef, staying right here? Or do you think we will continue to export it and reap the benefit monetarily? What do you see happening there?
Well, there's certainly some more noise about this these exports and imports. And I think that the potential lies for our exports to actually be exports. I mean, a lot of people are, there's this major misconception, and I mean, this is the tip of an iceberg, just to, I think, put it into, you know, kind of a condensed version, but most of this foreign trade isn't really foreign trade, it's foreign aid. And we have given our products away in the name of trade under the foreign aid thing. In other words, you're paying for it. You put it on a boat, you send it over there as foreign aid, and then you're, you know, whether they call it a loan or whatever they call it, it's never paid back. It's never held against the trade balance or anything else because of that. And I think that that's starting to dry up is what we're seeing. So that's going to bring exports up because they still need however many million bushels of grain or however many, you know, whatever agricultural product it is, because they don't feed their own people in a lot of cases. And it's like, okay, but the stuff that we import, we were paying for. That wasn't a foreign aid situation. That was a purchase thing. So, that, you know, and I think that this is what Trump's talking about. Well, it was a really bad deal when he was saying that, and that we're being taken advantage of. And it's been going on for clear back into the, you know, 60s and 70s, probably longer than that. But it's a very long-term abusive relationship when, you know, under foreign aid, we just feed all these people, and we're left foot in the bill as a result of the two. The markets are not real. I mean, that's the biggest problem with it. They don't represent, in most cases, real buying and real selling, and the influences and the pressures that result from that. You know, you got governments playing patty cake and handshake deals, and foreign aid going on, and it's damaging to, the people who produce. So I do think we'll see exports go up. That's my own opinion, because they'll have to, or people are going to go hungry. And
sure,
that's probably not going to happen. So
what? Go ahead, Will.
No, I was just going to say, just to go along with what Tim's saying, I don't know if y'all saw it or not, but two or three days ago, Trump announced that the United States is going to pull out of UNESCO, which is the United Nations something or the other. I don't know. It's one of their aid organizations, and it was, I believe, an immediate withdrawal, and he was citing the anti-American bias and its woke agenda. And it kind of goes along with what you're saying, Tim, is a lot of these aid organizations that you've seen are going to dry up, just because it seems like our government, the United States government, just simply isn't going to play their games anymore.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I heard the same thing. So back to a quick question. So I did see that the tariffs, from what I understand, 10% on the beef coming into the United States. And then I've seen a lot of numbers. So, like, we were talking about Brazil. I did see that we get over 400,000 tons of beef from Brazil every year. What are they processing the beef over in Brazil and then just shipping a product over here? Are they bringing live cows in here? How exactly do they do that?
My understanding on that is it's a lot of the like canned beef products and beef that you see in canned soups and that sort of thing. I think a lot of that is coming from Brazil. Tim, you may know more than me.
Well, I was just going to say the same thing. As far as I understand it, the majority of it is processed, but there is some fresh, specialized products that come in too, like the Wagyu beef,
I think it is the largest source of Wagyu, but it's like, at the same time, I was just wondering, it's like, okay, do they process it over there? Do they process it over here? I mean, just out of a curiosity, because, if they're processing it over here, then, you know, that's keeping a lot of people busy. That's a lot of jobs. If they're processing it over there, then they're robbing us of that as well.
I know, just from years of, you know, stocking canned goods and that sort of thing, what I noticed is a lot of your canned roast beef and beef stews and that sort of thing. If you read the labels, it'll tell you that the beef is a product of Brazil. And I would say that's more often than not what I see there.
Well, and I think that the majority of it, my personal observation, is the majority of what's coming over here in that tonnage is already processed. And it may be brought over even in the case of specialty meats or something, it may be brought over as boxed beef or as, you know, hanging quarters or something like that. But there's a whole different mechanism about importing beef on the hoof into this country. I mean, especially when you're not sharing a border or something. Disease.
So they can bring a packaged product over that's not USDA inspected and sell it on the shelves, but anything that anybody wants to produce here has got to be, you know, USDA inspected. talk about, you know, just a part of another sham, you know, scam.
It's very hypocritical, isn't it?
It is.
I mean, it's like... We want this to go, but we're going to shackle you guys that way, you know. But what kind of oversight do they have over that? So yeah, and it's the same way. A lot of this noise right now being made is Australia's lifting the bio restrictions on. Basically, we had almost a full ban of any of our beef products going to Australia for years, of course, Australia's attitude is, well, there hasn't been a full ban on it, but in essence. When you make it impossible to import it except for this loophole and that loophole, that's a full ban. You know what I mean? So, basically, the current administration went in and said, hey, what we're going to do is we're going to slap this big tariff on you for importing beef here because it's coming one way, but you won't let it go the other. And they're suddenly talking about, well, you know, maybe we could. The truth of the matter is odds are probably we're not going to import much beef to Australia one way or the other.
Right.
But it's the lack of parity in the fact that they can import all kinds of it here and hurt our markets here and hurt our ranchers and beef producers here. But we have no recourse that way, you know. So, I mean, honestly, we all know if your gas tank's full, you're not looking to buy anymore. So, we're one of the largest beef producing nations in the world. So, do we need all these markets to export to? Maybe third world countries and some of that. But the point is it comes along.
some of them they don't even eat cows.
Yeah, well, that's true too. Yeah, no doubt. So, yeah, you know, it's the old. You just see these. What it is the baggage it comes along with, because it doesn't just come along with that. They won't let them import cattle feed, maybe. Maybe you have a really good cattle feed that causes big gains. They'd be tickled to buy it over there in Australia. But due to this import-export scam and these holds on that, you can't import that either because of what they call biosecurity measures, you know. And so there are other, you know, branch industries that tie into that where you don't have the ability to trade back and forth. So it's a breaking. You want to trade, then let's trade. Yeah, you know, but you're not going to just come in here and flood our market with your stuff, and we don't have any turnabout.
I think the most important word I heard you say, Tim, was scam.
Yeah.
Just a scam. I mean, it's just, I was just doing some quick research, you know, and we're talking about sending our beef to Australia in this conversation. The majority of export of beef from Australia goes to China.
Right.
So you have Australia growing their own local beef that they're exporting to China, and we're wanting to export our beef to Australia. That's a lot of moving of beef. It seems like it would just be better to keep it in your own house.
In your own backyard. Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm gonna raise a steer and fatten it up and slaughter it and sell it to you, and I want you to do the same thing down there 1,200 miles away in Texas.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to drive mine down there and drop it off, and you can drive yours up here and drop it off.
That's right.
Insanity.
It is. It just, it's a different conversation, but the same kind of stuff. I was just thinking about Rudy Stanko and his book, The Score, right? This is all, I don't know. It's a scam. So,
it scams into that foreign aid and trade thing because, they make more money. Somebody, not the guy raising it, but somebody's making all this money off of that transport down there, and they get their, it's like, I'm the guy who's going to haul it, so I'll charge you 75% of your beef price, the one that goes to you, Will, and then I'm going to pick yours up and haul it up to Jason, and I'm going to get 75% of that one.
And getting on both ends,
and I'm going to make all this. That's the way that whole process works. There's that third party or that third element in there that's scraping it all off. So,
it's one of those things. Raising beef is right now it's tough. I mean, prices on everything is high. I mean, commodities are high. I look at these prices and it's like you've got to. And I've got some that we're feeding out right now, and it's challenging. I look at how much money I'm putting into these things and the prices of beef, but at the same time it's like, that's you look at what you're getting out, and it is just I wouldn't want to be doing it on a mass scale. I mean, it's you get what you put into them, and I get that, and we really try to feed them a good diet and take care of them, but at the same time it's one of those things where I would not want to be doing that, because it's not the rancher that's making them a lot of money. They're fronting the bill and putting a lot of money out, but you got to be real, real careful, because you can end up upside down real quick in the cattle market the way that things are today.
Yep. And that is not the way God works things. He says the laborer is worthy of his hire. And that's a broad spectrum statement, in that if you've done the work, you ought to get the pay out of it. And we see this socialist attitude all across our land today, that they don't put out, they don't. I mean, really, if you want to boil it down, it always goes back to the little red hen thing. remember that story when you were a kid about the little red hen who, picked the flour and made the bread and everything else. And that's what it is. But we have this. We have this attitude that's prevalent across the land in a lot of general population situations where now you owe everybody else something. It's like, it's wrong. And it goes against godly teachings, too. So,
well, I'm going to take a moment and be a rebel, just like you guys. And I'm just going to say what y'all believe too, but for everybody that's listening, do your best to not buy into the corporate beef system. Try to buy from somebody. If you're not raising your own, try to find somebody local that does ground beef or cuts of meat and contribute to your local economy. And you know where your meat's coming from, and it's not coming from Brazil or Australia or gosh knows where. It's coming from down the road. Do your best to participate in that side of the economy, and don't feed the corporate side. That's what I think.
Yeah.
I agree 100%. Yeah, know your farmer, know your rancher, know where your food's coming from. It's and I've talked to people, and it's like, well, I can save, I can save 20 cents or 30 cents or, maybe sometimes it's more than that, by going and supporting the big box stores. But I really believe that that's what we're supposed to be doing. I think that's loving your neighbors yourself, is taking care, wanting your neighbor to thrive, wanting those that are around you. I very strongly agree with, supporting small business, and especially when it comes to the farming and ranching communities.
100%.
And I mean, it's like, I'll tell you what, you get even some ground beef or steak from a local somebody that raises their beef, you know, does a, you know, farm to table kind of thing, and just the taste difference, the quality difference. I mean, it's substantial. It's, and you know, I've talked to a lot of those guys and, you know, asked them about hormones and inoculations and stuff like that. A lot of those people are, you know, the only thing that they'll use if they have to is an antibiotic, and that's when they get something sick. But yeah, they said that if, you know, if we use it, you know, it's quarantined, and depending on how much we have to give them, you know, we'll cull it and send them to market. But that's what, I mean, they really try to help people and try to do what's right for people to eat. And I appreciate that.
I know the guys that we deal with here that we buy beef from, that's just down the road from us, exactly what you're describing, Jason, and their guarantee to us is if they do have to use antibiotics because of a sickness in an animal, they're quarantined, and they wait, I believe it's 60 days before they will do anything with that beef, so that the antibiotics has a time to work itself out of the cow. So that it's not getting passed on to your plate, which, you know, those are the things, those are the considerations that just simply won't happen with these big box beef stores. You know, they don't care. And well, I wanted to say real fast, too, I'm just going to take kind of a holistic hippie moment and talk about local beef and local honey and that kind of stuff. I'm a guy who suffers from allergies. I have terrible allergies. And one of the things that we have found is when you have a cow that's grazing locally, it's eating the clover and the grass and whatever is available, the stuff that's the pollen producers that, you know, agitate your allergies. It really helps, I believe, to eat locally, because that animal and whatever God's design, as it's processing that clover and the grass and ragweed and whatever it is it's eating, it's almost like it's a natural antihistamine when you're intaking that into your body. I can see a marked difference in my allergies when I'm eating local beef that's been eating the local flora and fauna. The same thing for the raw milk. You know, when I'm buying my raw milk from 10 miles down the road, it helps my allergies tremendously, as well as the honey. So I think it's by God's design that we should be eating what our neighbors are producing and what we're producing, and not what they're producing in Australia or Brazil.
We got to move on, but same thing with the honey. Local honey is, it's huge for people with allergies. I've known a lot of people that completely get rid of their allergies by getting some local honey that comes from their area. And I mean, it's the same thing. It's what you're talking about, Will. It's, they're eating the clover, they're getting that, and it does wonders. And I think that is, you know, local honey is absolutely the best thing that anybody can do. I mean, sometimes it's hard to find. It depends on where you live. I agree. We can't do that. I would be, highly aware of the honey that comes out of like China and stuff like that, because a lot of the honey that they sell here in the United States is actually the stuff that they use to preserve bodies with. And it's not virgin honey when they sell it. It's actually the stuff that they drain off of the tanks that they put the bodies in, and put that in the honey packets and stuff that you see in a lot of restaurants. So that's something definitely to stay away from.
Yeah.
Well, and I seen G7 nation to recognize Palestinian state, outrage from the U.S. Israel officials. I saw that headline, and one of you men sent that over, and it's like, okay, this is definitely going to be interesting, and I can definitely see that it's going to get some outrage. What are your thoughts on that?
Of all nations, France, that's the G7 nation, has decided that they're, starting, they're turning their back a little bit on Israel and saying that they do not agree with what's going on in Gaza, and they are going to recognize the Palestinian as a legitimate state, and they're making a commitment to the state of Palestine, this is a little preemptive. There's a huge General Assembly meeting in the United Nations coming in September, and Emmanuel Macron, the French president, is going to address the General Assembly and say France now recognizes Palestine as a real nation. And I think that's going to have some repercussions, don't y'all think?
I would think it'd have to.
Well, it's kind of I'd call it a dodgeball moment. I mean, this has been being batted around, the recognition of the Palestinian state, for the last 20 years over there.
Yeah.
And people just keep dodging the ball all the time. They're playing pat and cake with the Israelis on this. But the optics of this current regime and of what's going on there with all of the aid being stolen and taken in. I just read an article, I don't have it in front of me, but they just did a major study into all this aid missing, because there are children starving to death over there, on the Gaza Strip, by the day, and dying, and this aid that's being sent is being stolen or not given to the people, supposedly. And all I have is what I can read or what I can find. I'm not there, obviously. But the point is they were basically saying it's not being stolen by terrorist organizations or by other organizations. It's basically being prevented from going to those people. And when you get into some of the other articles, they're looking at this creating, they want to get their objectives in place. And one of their, I guess you'd call it religious leaders, he's not part of the political cabinet, but he was basically saying, let them start. We're not responsible for feeding our enemies, or anything else. And it's interesting to me, because this will come up a little further down the line as we talk here. Are we supposed to just let people, when people have donated that kind of stuff, is that a godly thing to do, to let people starve to death or to let that go on? I mean, there's a whole bunch of things here that are creating this pressure to do this. And the other thing is, honestly, anti-Israeli sentiment is majorly on the rise in the U.S. I mean, I've never seen as many people, even especially in high-profile positions, that are coming out and saying, the things that are being said that are anti-Israeli state. So there's definitely
really across the world, Tim. I mean, the anti-Israel sentiment across the world is just on fire right now. I want to read that quote from the guy you're talking about. And he's a member of the cabinet and government. It's the Israeli Heritage Minister, Amishai Aliyahu. And his quote in talking about these Gaza, that the Palestinians in Gaza starving because, Israel is blocking the aid going in there. His quote was, "We shouldn't be dealing with hunger in Gaza. Let the world take care of them. No nation feeds its enemies. Have we completely lost our minds? We should not care about their evening meal." Well, that's great. And maybe you shouldn't feed your enemies. The problem with that is the real story is Israel controls all the ports that surround Gaza, and they control the checkpoints that are on land coming into Gaza. And the Israeli government is, they're blocking these aid shipments that are going in, and they're doing everything they can to prevent that. And in many instances, Israel has these, for lack of a better term, treaty with these aid organizations, that Israel acts as the distribution agent for this food that's supposed to be going to Gaza. And so they receive the food, and it never sets foot there. They're intentionally starving these people. And anybody that knows history, this sure seems to me reminiscent of the Soviet era Jews, like Stalin, who starved the Ukrainians and that sort of thing. And, you want to talk about Holocaust the number escapes me now, but I think it was something, was it 60 million? I don't remember. It was a massive number of Christians that died of starvation at the hands of the communists. And they did it the exact same way. They controlled the food, and they just cut off the supplies and let them starve to death. And that sure seems to be history repeating itself right now.
Well, and I've seen it. I've seen pictures and videos and read articles about when they do send that those food trucks in and those aid trucks in, how they Israel is using those just to set up ambushes and shooting the people that are coming for food. Now that's you know when when you're sending in aid and food to feed a starving people, and then you're shooting them when they come running for food. That's a bunch of, you know what, and it's I mean it's just it's not right, it's wrong, and it's happening all the time over there, and they are covering it up, and it's censored here in the United States. There was an article that I think I shared it with both of you men, but it was something that was shared with me. It was about the Green Beret. It was about a 15-minute audio clip that had been spread around. I'd seen it several different places. It was about talking about this guy came back and he was a Green Beret and he was stationed over there and he came back with a hatred for Jews after seeing what they did and how they were shooting the children when people were coming trying to gather their children. They were laughing about it, shooting them, making basically a game out of it. And that It was scrubbed. I mean, I went and looked for it, and I had seen it several places. Every place that I had seen that video, it was gone.
Amazing. That video profoundly affected me. I just want to. I mean, I had heard it before. You know,
I had too. Exactly. Yes.
It had been a few years since I heard it. When you sent it to me, Jason, I was driving somewhere and I ended up playing it through the truck, and even though I had heard the information before, I'm telling you, it affected me because, you know, I'm thinking about my own kids, and this guy's going in detail of, you know, these guys gut shooting kids and waiting for their parents to come out so that they could, you know, get two for one, you know, and what parent is going to watch their child, you know, dying in the street and not try to help them? And that's beyond warfare. You know, that's not legitimate warfare, in my opinion. You know, it's I don't have. Well, I do have some words for it, but I won't say it on this program. But it's just they're animals. I don't know anything else to say.
Yeah, it's reprehensible. I mean, that's about as strong a word as I can think of. It's wise to say, but it's it's just like
it's
and it's definitely cowardly.
I think about wolves and jackals and hyenas and animals that, you know, kind of take pleasure in ripping their prey apart and that sort of thing. And that's just what comes to mind is, you know, there's no honor in the way that they're killing. You know, it's all like you were saying, Jason, it's almost like sport. They're just that's bloodlust. They're just taking they're making it a sport. And it's just it's something.
Well, I think that's why the Bible calls them brute beasts and all the different terms that they are of the synagogue of Satan.
Yeah. Yep.
And they idolize the process. There's no goal. I mean, that's what they they take great joy in causing the pain and the suffering. Well, and for example, there's going back to this Gaza aid thing, the United Nations Palestinian Refugee Agency, they've got supposedly have 6,000 trucks that are stalled at Egypt and Jordan's borders right now, and the Israeli officials won't let them in. So, you know, and the Israeli officials are accusing Hamas and other armed groups of stealing these supplies and attacking the civilians. So they're saying somebody else is doing what they're doing, you know, and it's like,
That sounds like a kind of a Jew thing anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Accuse their enemy of what you're doing. That's kind of standard operating procedure. So, and the other thing that astounds me about this whole thing is that they're talking about war goals. You know, the focus on Gaza and Yemen and Syria. And they just keep broadening this out. They're using this as an excuse or as an what do you want to call it, opportunity to do all these nasty things that they wanted to do. And it's pretty easy to see that they don't, and really it's a what do you want to call it, empire building. I mean, if you want to get right down to it, they're not, you think they're going to stop right there? No, they're not interested in that. They want the whole world, you know, and they pretty much say that, although it's veiled, but that's kind of the way that's the way it works. So,
well, reading that article you're referencing, Tim, I mean, to me, when did Israel declare war on all these nations? You know, their official communique is coming out saying that they're nearing their war goals. Did Israel declare war on the entire Middle East and we weren't told? Because I didn't. They have war goals as far as expanding their borders, like you're talking about, Tim. And I don't remember that. You know, I don't remember Iran. I remember the attacks in the middle of the night, you know, of these kind of cowardly attacks with Syria and Lebanon and Yemen and Iran and all of that. But I don't really remember an all-out war being declared, but I guess there is. But, yeah, that's
a formal declaration. Right.
There is no formal declaration. Yeah, there's nothing like that. It's just interesting. You know, one of the things that's talked about is that, you know, what they're doing is the way they're spending it, Israel's taking offensive action against regional threats. And I thought, yeah, you know, the only regional threat there is them. They're regionally going after everybody. And, you know, these poor dudes are, I don't know.
We're talking about the Israeli defense minister, Israel Katz, and he made some statements, but one of the statements that he made to me that is very lifting the veil as far as giving some clarity into it is he said, quote, "Our doctrine of offensive action remains unchanged," end quote.
Yeah.
Katz said, "And we will see it through until a complete and lasting victory." So, you know, when you look at some of that, it's like, I'm not sure what the defined characteristic of what they're talking about is. I mean, you know, it's basically just he said that they must prepare for a continued wide-scale and comprehensive campaign. So, and evidently the doctrine is to just defend everybody they possibly can, which they are doing a pretty good job at. So I'd say judging from the worldwide increase in anti-Israeli sentiment that they're succeeding. They're offending pretty much everyone. So.
Yeah, they're perpetual war. I mean, I think that's I think that's their defensive doctrine. It's just they're going to be a perpetual war. That sure seems to be their playbook, and it may not be kinetic war for them, but it's certainly stirring up chaos, you know, all over the world, not just in their region.
Yeah, destabilized.
Speaking of which, you know, Russia and Ukraine are still at it, and I came across an article that stuff. You know, Jason, you were talking about stuff we don't hear in the news. And this last week, the reports are Ukraine, the Ukrainian soldiers, about 3,000 of them were killed last week.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you guys about that, and that was, I mean, I saw that article, and I looked at it, and I thought, well, okay, that was that in the last month, or was that in the last year? It was in the last week. It was crazy, and then
last 7 days.
Yeah, 7 days. Yeah. Almost 3,000, 22 armored vehicles that were shot down, and thousands. They shot down thousands of drones also. Crazy.
Yeah, a huge number of, you know, so I guess the reason why that's important for me to bring up is just remember, just because we're not hearing it doesn't mean it's not happening. It's continuing on. Just a huge loss of numbers there. And that was in one instance. You know, if you read that article, they actually talk about that was from one battle group inside the Ukraine. If you look at the totality of all of the different fronts with inside that contested area, Ukraine actually lost about 5,000 soldiers in 7 days. which is astounding. You know, that's about three times the size of the town I live in. You know, that's a ton of people to be gone. And so they're very much still at war there. And I personally, I haven't kept up with it as well as I should, but I don't know where those peace talks are, if they're still going, or if we're just still at perpetual war. I don't know.
Well, to me, when we started talking about this, and it brought back the verse of wars and rumors of wars. And I want to read Matthew 24, starting in verse 6. And it says, "And you will be hearing of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not alarmed, for these things must take place, but that is not yet the end. For nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famine and earthquakes in various places. But all these things are merely the beginning of the birth pains. Then they will hand you over to tribulation and kill you, and you will be hated by all nations because of my name. And at that time, many will fall away, and they will betray one another and hate one another. And many false prophets will rise up and mislead many people. And because lawlessness is increased, most people's love will become cold. But the one who endures to the end is the one who will be saved." But that first part in verse 6, I really think that, you know, we're talking about wars, you know, all these different wars, and it's wars and it's rumors of wars. We're, you know, hearing about, you know, is this other war going to start? I don't know if that's the time that we're in, but it sure seems like that's where we're at.
Yeah, and to go along with that, I heard about this. I didn't throw anything in. I don't know if you guys have seen the articles, but talk about wars and rumors of wars in places that we never think about. Sounds like Thailand and Cambodia have decided to go to war with one another, and their respective air forces are dropping missiles on each other and along that border region. And I'm not sure I knew. I don't recall ever hearing anything like that they were enemies or enemy combatants or anything like that. But yeah, that's been going on for a few days now that they've been exchanging missile fire at one another. I don't know if y'all heard about that.
I heard about that, and the first thing that popped into my mind is, where are they getting the money to fight this war? You know,
no kidding.
It's like Cambodia and Thailand. You think of really broke countries that don't have a.
Cambodia is one of the poorest countries in the world.
Exactly.
And you know, I saw some video footage of. You know, Thailand is flying jets into Cambodia, and Cambodia has anti-aircraft artillery. And I'm thinking, they don't have rice to feed their kids. How do you have anti-aircraft batteries? And I mean modern stuff, not stuff that was left there during Vietnam. I mean modern military equipment and crazy stuff.
They didn't build it there. They didn't build it in Cambodia. I guarantee you that.
It wasn't made of bamboo, Jason. I don't think it was built there. It was brought in from somewhere. Chances are it says Russia on it or the United States on it or maybe Israel. I don't know. But, it's not home-built in Cambodia. That's for doggone sure.
Yeah, I guarantee it. And it's like, okay, somebody's funding that because there is an agenda behind it. Somebody plans – they have something that somebody wants. And, I mean, you know, I mean, who knows? It could be like a BlackRock thing that they're trying to find some rare earth mineral that they can only get in Cambodia or Thailand. And they decided that they want this area. So it's like, okay, here, you guys go and fight.
There's a purpose behind it.
Yeah, there is, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's just, and Thailand has quite a lot of, they are kind of a banking seat in that area. I mean, they do have, there's some, what do you want to call it? That's a money center over there. But Cambodia is like a nothing burger as far as, and it's kind of like North Korea. You talk about their military assets in Cambodia, but it's very much like the North Koreans. I mean, they're even on the same kind of political landscape, but it wouldn't surprise me any that they have weapons and their people are starving because it's the same thing. They only care about the war, not food. So
you said it. I got a couple things on that, but you said it. I wasn't going to say it, Tim, but you said it. Thailand is known. It is the centralized area for banking outside of China for that kind of Southeast China Sea area. That's where that is the money center, and it's also the largest population of Jews in Southeast Asia.
Imagine that, Thailand.
Yeah, because of the financial and the banking industry there. And so if you're looking for a bagel, you can find it in Bangkok, Thailand. That's where that's at. And it was interesting to me that Thailand, which I'm just from memory, I mean, maybe you guys, I don't recall Thailand being at war with anyone ever.
No, I can't either. No.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's interesting about this to me is Cambodia, you know, they've had some conflicts over the years, going back to Vietnam and even before that, with Laos and Cambodia and Vietnam, French Indochina and all of that. But Thailand has more or less been neutral, and a lot of that has to do with kind of the Switzerland of the Southeast Asia. It's the banking sector, and they just kind of stay neutral. So to me, it was really interesting that Thailand is on the offensive in Cambodia. And, you know, it just makes you scratch your head, like you were saying, Jason, is, all right, what's in Cambodia that we don't know about? You know, is it gold? Is it, you know, lithium? Is it, what is it? There's something there now. And Cambodia and Laos got pulled into that whole Vietnam thing back in the 60s, and really even before that in the 50s, because the amazing amount of rubber that they had there, rubber tree plants, that were all through the jungle, and that was why they were players during that conflict, is because, you know, the world, whoever you want to say it, the major players, they wanted access to that, and those nations got dragged into that war, and so there's something. I guarantee you, within the next 5 years, we'll hear about some major deposit in Cambodia of some rare mineral, and Thailand will probably be controlling it.
I agree. Well, and yeah, they sent, that's where during the Vietnam War, that's where most of the guys ended up taking their R&R. I mean, you know, they weren't in battle, so sent them to, that was where your R&R was, back into Vietnam you went. But yeah, so they're, you know, Switzerland's a good example of it. They're very convenient.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we're not supposed to know any of this stuff. You know, we're supposed to just keep our head down and eat grass and not pay attention. And I was reminded this week by someone that I know that, you know, they want America just to be a nation of sheep that's ruled by wolves, and we're all owned by pigs. So that's what they want. So we need to stay more informed than that. That's for sure.
Very good.
Very good point. Yeah.
Yeah, and true. Kind of coming back home, did you guys see, have you seen the ICE crackdowns and the arrest surges and assaults on agents?
Yeah.
And it's really just, there's just so much stuff going on. But one of the things, the takeaways I got out of that was, in 2025 is set to be the first negative immigration numbers we've had in 50 to 60 years as far as illegal aliens coming in. So that's huge. I mean,
that is huge.
Usually you're lucky. Yeah. Usually lucky if you can keep it at one in, one out. You know what I mean?
Well, if you're not paying them, you know, $8,000 and a month and putting them in a Hilton or a Ramada and giving them free rental cars and everything that they want, basically, it's they're not going to be coming here.
Around here, hearing what's going on, you know, remember, I'm down South Texas. I've been hearing local law enforcement is experiencing something they've never experienced, and that's these illegals walking into sheriff's offices and police departments and saying, I'm here to deport myself.
Wow.
That has only started in the last couple of weeks. And I know what I've heard is, you know, more than about a dozen have just walked in and said, hey, I don't know what the process here, but I'm ready to go back to Nicaragua. And I'm ready to go back to Honduras. And that's really happening within, I don't know, probably three or four counties around me. That's happening quite a bit now. And some of it has to do with we have a couple of pretty large meatpacking facilities within 10, 15 miles. And they almost exclusively employ less than citizens, right? They're all illegals they have there. And I guess they got their first visit from someone from ICE, and miraculously those people don't have jobs anymore. And now they don't have jobs, they have no prospects. They're showing up at local law enforcement saying, I'm ready to go back now. So that's a positive thing. I hope that starts happening all across the country. I was told that the fine, was $30,000 a day on this meat packing plant. $30,000. Wow. You can only run a few days before that eats into your profits and you're not a business anymore. And, I think that's a positive thing. You talk about that ratio, Tim, of more are going out that are coming in, and that's what made me think of this. Is I think there's a lot of self deportations happen across this country.
It seems to be much higher. I've heard things about it too. I hadn't heard all that, but I know that there's people leaving one way or the other.
Yeah, yep.
All lined up at the border down there, wanting to jump south instead of north. So
yep.
I think that what we're seeing there is, you know, Jason said it too, all you have to do is stop paying them and they're going to leave, because, you know, basically our Social Security recipients in the United States, to put it into perspective, their average income off of Social Security is about $1,500-$1,600 a month. These illegal aliens were coming in and they were getting $3,200 a month. Plus health care, plus a phone, plus. And it's like, why would they stay? Why would they want to go? You know, I mean, right. Sounds like they got a pretty good deal. So when you sour the deal, their prospects change. And they're going to start looking at their, you know, looking at the menu going, we'll go back home. So...
I wonder. I haven't heard anything about it, but it would be a curiosity of some of those hotels that we talked about several months ago, when in some areas where they had those hotels that had dedicated floors to these. I don't know if they were illegals or not. If they were illegals or if they were legally here, but I wonder if those have all got cleaned up yet.
That makes me want to reach out now that you say that, Jason, and maybe do some inquiry.
I was just thinking about it. It's like, man, we should just see what we can find out, because I know there was quite a bit of different towns and stuff, and we talked about it, and it's like, huh.
Yes.
I mean, at the same time, it's like, okay, maybe they were all here legally. I didn't think that they were, but they were getting paid. So I don't know, just curious. We'll have to. I don't have any information in front of me, but it was just a thought, and I'm like, man, we should talk about that. We should see what we can find out. That'll be interesting.
Yeah, no kidding.
I know that we've been talking about it over the last couple months too, about this power grid, and there's just so much stuff. It seems like the power grid has been in the news a lot lately, and. Now it's, you know, this AI, they're saying that the AI has done so much or is using up so much power, and they're building all these new substations and trying to do that. What is, Tim, I know you had mentioned some stuff about that. What do you think is going on there?
Well, they're continuing the amount of power that it's going to take in order, and there's this big frenzy to be first in AI, which you know, it's bad no matter who wins. I mean, if you just because you win, you're still losing. But they're talking about us needing basically 90 gigawatts of power, like tomorrow, to run all this. And when you look at that,
so are these just like servers that they're using to create AI? Is that what it is? Is it like a server farm?
Yeah.
Is that what it, I mean? Okay.
There are server farms, and then also, the way I understand it, it takes a great amount. It's going to take a great deal of power to run the actual AI itself, as far as these computer stacks and server farms and everything else. And the U.S. our 2023 statistics on power usage is about 1,200 gigawatts annually, and we already know that we have rolling brownouts and that we have power shortages as it goes. So they're saying we need another, you know, 8% more, which is like 90 new power plants. I mean, basically, a power plant, a gigawatt power plant, is a pretty big power plant. So, they're talking about the fact that probably, given the short-term usage goals and all this to maintain that, probably not going to have AC, probably not going to have, one of the only bright spots I can see is it kind of got rid of the EV rage, because obviously that's not going to happen. That was even worse for power consumption than the AI server farms. But, you know, we got a huge surge for electric demand. The growth, 8% is huge. The average annual growth in the U.S. is 0.5% per year. That's what they try to maintain a growth rate at. We're talking about tomorrow we need 8%. And that's just for that year. I mean, it's going to go up. They expect it to double every year after that. So 90 new power plants wouldn't even hardly cover what they need. And you don't just go down and build a power plant in, 15 minutes. I mean, it's not a...
I don't think you do that in... I think those take years to build, don't they?
Years?
Yeah. You don't just... I mean, if they'd already broke ground on 90 plants, it would take 5 to 10 years to get them online. And that's not even nuclear plants. That would be more along the lines of coal-fired or something like that. Nuclear plants can take up to 20 years because they've got to be certified. They're currently not really... building, what do we want to call it, nuclear containment vessels are pretty much offline. It's not like that's a high-use market. So 90 is a big number in those situations. I mean, like, huge. So we're in a situation there where they've already pulled the trigger on this AI thing, or are trying to, and it's just going to cause all kinds of problems with power consumption, power generation. And in the meantime, we're talking about putting our country back on with these tariffs and with these other items. We're talking about bringing our country back online as far as supply, as far as manufacturing goes. So these numbers are not adjusted to show those kinds of things coming on. I mean, if you double production at a domestic level, you're going to double power output at the domestic level. I mean, just that could run us up, like 2,500 gigawatts annually or something like that. We're not running aluminum smelting plants, that's one really high draw. I mean, we're not running steel plants. We're not running, these are major electricity hogs when you start doing that. So it's a real bottleneck. Or a choke point.
What's that going to do to the electrical prices? I mean, where's all this money going to come from? I mean, is this government grants that are supposed to, come up with these power plants, or what do you see happening there?
Well, and that's the real question. They're looking for electric rates to almost double in the next, 24 months, all over the place.
Are the reason they're doubling, Tim, are we going to be paying for these AI facilities? I mean, is it... That guess what going along with what Jason's saying is the Fed just going to subsidize those as an incentive for them to come online?
Well, and I'm sure both. you know what I'm saying? I mean, indirectly, electricity rates would add to the building of additional power units and everything else. And, of course, it's supply and demand. But electricity is a finicky thing because supply and demand is when you hit the wall on how much electricity is out there, there isn't anymore, no matter what price. I mean, it's like, so when you hit the wall, somebody maybe pays more to take yours. You know, I mean, it's like, yeah. So we're in a, it's a real catch 22 all the way around.
Well, and I'm just thinking, if you, I mean, just you think about the infrastructure to add 90 power plants, or let's say that you added 10 across the country, just to be able to transport that electricity. I mean, that's going to take years to, you know, put those main lines in
transmission lines
and to get from point A to point B or distribution points or anything like that to where you can inject it back into the system. It's, I mean, you're talking, it's almost like there's a major crisis going on there.
There is. And it is one of the, probably, what do you want to call it? It's a sleeper because no one really understands, and they're going to about the time it hits, but it is a situation where we're dealing with you know, brace for impact type thing, because it's coming. If they continue down the road that they're on, it's going to create a major issue. And electricity's not, you know, as a country, we have grown to, you know, it's kind of like it's a background thing. Well, you flip the switch, the lights come on. You need air conditioning. You turn the thermostat down and the AC comes on. I mean, you know, you need to weld something together. What if there isn't? You know, what if those things? And it may not even be, we talk about infrastructure attacks on the electricity all the time. But to my mind, at least, this is just another infrastructure attack. I mean, we're basically looking at leaving people without something that is, what if you want to call it, in this country, it has become just like groceries or water or other things. It's a necessity that you really need in order to continue life at the level that you're living in. So,
wouldn't this be an infrastructure attack from within, though, Tim? I mean,
I think so.
I mean, because they're permitting these AI facilities to come online, and it seems very careless and reckless that they're coming online knowing that the grid can't support it. Seems like
exactly.
a disaster in the making. You know, that's my question is, you know, I know we're talking years down the road of building these new transmission lines and substations and that sort of thing. What are the chances they're just going to use the existing infrastructure to power AI and we'll be less suffering for it?
That's my point.
The retail consumer. Yeah.
Someone's going to end up doing without. It's probably not going to be AI.
Yeah. And I mean, what a better way to do it than to, you know, to jack up the prices and double the prices, and it's real easy. You know, you can't pay, then we flip the switch and you don't get power. If you're willing to pay, we'll keep you online.
Yeah. So there's, and the other problem that we have is speaking about all this, I don't know, you know, I've worked at power plants when they're being built, and I've been around that kind of stuff my whole life. And the amount of people that are there working, it's astounding. I mean, it's a small city, you know, as far as those things going on. You're not talking about a crew of 30 guys. You're talking about a crew of 800 guys working on something like that.
Right.
And all the resulting equipment and infrastructure to support them. And currently we're, you know, trades are really hurting right now. I mean, and that's the other thing that goes into this with this AI thing. It's such a big pie, but, you know, when you look at the fact that AI is probably going to end up taking jobs from people, particularly white collar jobs. I mean, you know, there's a huge consider, and maybe they're making it worse than it is. I don't know. You know, basically, coders, lawyers, writers, all of this kind of stuff, they're talking about putting that over to AI. Well, Mike Rose said it, I think, but they're not coming after the steam fitters or the electricians because AI can't do that. But the point is currently we're at around 7 million body shortfall on trades in this country. That's right now. That doesn't include this infrastructure that's coming in to build power plants, to build transmission lines, to build server farms, to build all these other things that need to go. I mean, and when you look at that, it's just another choke point, you know, that's going on. And it's in existence. So
I recently came across a meme that I'll try to share without the visual. It's a split screen of two guys, two fellows, and one's named Adam and one's named Chris. And Adam's on the left, and underneath Adam are some bullet points that says Adam has a master's degree in philosophy. He has $100,000 in student debt. Adam can't find a philosophy job, but Adam thinks that people without degrees are stupid. And on the right-hand side is Chris, and Chris had a 4-year paid apprenticeship as an electrician. He has no student debt. He makes over $100,000 a year, and Chris is about to disconnect Adam's electricity. And
yeah.
True. Yeah, exactly.
Well, we're going to take a real quick break, and we'll be right back after the song. Stay tuned, folks.
Now here's a song for all of you liberals who believe your ways are best, who don't mind overcrowding this nation with a swarm of foreign immigrants, who don't care about the population, who don't care if it's foul on our nest. When are you ever gonna read the writing upon the wall? We got crime overtaking our cities. We got gangs taking over our streets. We keep handing out more and more welfare, though it never seems to meet their needs. What kind of culture are we cultivating? One where you never have to pull any weeds. If we don't stop this immigration, this great nation's gonna fall. Let's get a grip on immigration in these great United States. It's high time that we limit their numbers. It's high time that we close up that gate. Now can't you see how we are rapidly becoming another third world fascist state? Let's get a grip on immigration in these great United States. How can we ever come to any solution when all we ever do is debate? We've got to get a tighter grip on our borders. We've got to seriously legislate and quit trying to fan the flame that I'm a racist and quit trying to fabricate that I hate. And get a grip on immigration. Now you know it's not too late. Let's get a grip on immigration in these great United States. It's high time that we limit their numbers. It's high time we start closing that gate and quit trying to fan the flame that I'm a racist and quit trying to fabricate that I hate and get a grip on immigration in these great United States. Let's get a grip on immigration. Now you know it's not too late. It's high time that we limit their numbers. It's high time that we close up that gate. Can't you see how we are rapidly becoming another third world fascist police state? Let's get a grip on immigration in these great United States and quit trying to fan the flame that I'm a racist and quit
trying to fabricate that I hate. And get a grip on the immigration in these great United States.
And we're back, and you're listening to Coffee with the Radio Ranch Wranglers here on the Scriptures for America Worldwide Broadcasting Network. And where do you men want to go next?
Well, I see where the Denver mayor, Mike Johnson, I think, is being threatened with jail time during a congressional hearing over immigration policy. I mean, we were talking about Trump's ICE a little bit ago, but I kind of thought that was interesting locally speaking. So, because they're shipping illegal aliens into Aurora, and he hired a lawyer, evidently, because he's a little worried about it. So,
as he should be.
But I thought it was interesting that in the midst of all this, I don't consider him a Christian man in any definition of the word, but I thought it was interesting that in another quote kind of related there, that he was talking about, he quoted the Bible that, you know, he has, as mayor, I have to protect the health and safety of everyone in our city. As a man of faith, I'm not sure what faith, I have a moral obligation to care for those in need, he said. As scripture said, for I was hungry and you gave me something to eat, and I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. So that's what we did. But I kind of think he just gave them the whole place.
Well, he made a big deal about, he's like, we're not, you know, when people asked him about being a sanctuary city, he says, we're not a sanctuary city, we're a welcoming city. And, you know, that was one of the big things that he was going on too. And, you know, it was a 40,000 or 50,000 people that came in to that area of Denver over an 18-month period. And that was back in, I think it was 22, early 23. And I mean, you're talking about, you know, we throw these numbers out, 40,000, 50,000, you know, coming into an area. I mean, that's the whole population of a lot of towns across the country. Yeah. I mean, that's like a big town across the country, you know, a lot of places. I mean, Tim, you live in a town. How many people is, or you not live in a town, but I mean, one of the bigger towns around you is, what has it got, 10,000, 15,000 people?
Yeah, like 8,000. And then okay. You go north a little bit, there's one there that's 36,000. You know, so yeah.
But you have to. You would have to drive a long ways from where you're at to get to a town of 40,000 people, wouldn't you?
Yeah, at least 2.5 hours or so. Yeah. So yes, for sure. Yeah, that's a lot of people. That's a lot of people to feed, a lot of trash, a lot of water, a lot of resources. So, and I don't know what the size of Aurora is, but yeah. And the other thing is he's like, well, we all we are each entitled to our opinion, our own opinion about what should happen at the border. But, you know, it's like, no, there's rules that you have that are part of country making regarding borders. You don't have a country if you don't have a border. It's that simple. I mean, it's not complex. You might decide what the process is for real and true immigration, but
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, wait. Denver set up 8 city-funded shelters. They're now closed. Gee, I wonder why. You know, can you imagine having the homeless shelters and you drop 42,000 people on them? I mean, I don't know what those shelters were set up to handle number-wise. Maybe a couple hundred apiece, or you know. Maybe that's generous. I don't know. But if you suddenly drop 42,000 people on them, they're gone. That's what happens when you break the bank. When you don't have infrastructure.
Well, I think it's just like it's like an entitlement on a whole different level. It's like, okay, you know, they don't understand what illegal is versus legal. And, oh, the law is not going to apply to me. It's like, okay, you know, here's somebody that just is going to decide that, okay, we're just not going to follow the rules. We're not going to follow the regulations. And then they spend $80 million on these supporting these illegals that they bring in, and they can't afford to do it anymore because they run out of money. They want federal money. They want somebody else to pay for it. They've gotten, you know, you bringing in that many people, and it's like, yeah, they spent, and it's over, I think it's over $80 million now on these illegals just in that one of those small areas down there in Denver alone. So you're bringing in people that are not contributing to society. They're not the ones that are paying the taxes. They're the ones that are, I mean, they're just parasites. You know, I mean, they've sucked $80 million out of the economy down there. And that's what's happening basically everywhere that you can call them what you want, sanctuary cities, welcoming cities, whatever. That's what they have done every single place that they have moved into and done that with.
Right. Well, and the simple fact of the matter is, the government has nothing that they have to give away, quote unquote. They had to take it from somebody else. And here we have this governor mulling around and with his dribbles talking about taking care of people and helping. What about the people that are actually the ones who voted you in, the people who are there, the people who have stake in the city that are productive and try to make it what it is? You don't have any moral obligation to them, because you know, if you come in and destroy them, what the gross outcome of it is, and it's gross, is the fact that it's all destroyed. You know what I'm saying? So you can either build up and promote some of it, or you can destroy it all. And how is destroying it all caring for the people that you're, you know, doing your job? it's math, man. I mean, it's not even algebra. It's just plain math, you know. So,
well, I liked what that Representative Clay Higgins, I think he's from Louisiana, said to Johnston in one of these hearings. He said, one, you said you're willing to go to jail. Well, we might just give you that opportunity.
You may have that opportunity. I thought that was good.
I was reading over this guy's bio, the Denver mayor, and there is no doubt if Joseph McCarthy was still around, this guy would be on the list of un-American activity. This guy is pretty much from birth. Has been raised up to be a communist. I don't know. It's just sort of amazing looking over his qualifications and his bio. He's a piece of work. So that's one of his claims of fame, just so you guys know, is he acted as the chief executive officer of Gary Community Ventures, which during the COVID-19 pandemic delivered 2 million test kits and tens of thousands of vaccinations across Colorado. I can't really find anything else he did to qualify him as mayor, but but he worked for Barack Obama. He worked for Al Gore. And he's fluent in Spanish. He's very proud of that too, that he is a fluent Spanish speaker. Anyways, just a interesting guy. I would just call him a communist, but there's a lot of new terms for that.
I think so too. Yeah. And I mean, down in Denver, one of the, there was another representative that jumped on, him about, an incident that took place in Denver. And they said that, they gave ICE less than 2 hours before they released these suspects from that Venezuelan game. What was that? Trende Aragua. Yeah. So they gave him less than 2 hours notice that, hey, we're releasing these people. Then the ICE officers were assaulted, in the parking lot by this gang member. And I mean, this guy, you just look at his rap sheet and it is, yeah, I put him in prison. These are the kind of people that we want to, that need to go to prison. You know, they need to be held accountable for their lying, stealing, cheating, deceiving, not caring about the people. I mean, you know, here's a mayor that, that obviously does not care about the good, respectable citizens of Denver.
Yes, exactly. Well, and I think one of the other things that's telling to me is you see these Will's word communist agitators, and that's what he is. I mean, he's basically eating his own
commie bastards is a better term, but yeah.
Right. But then when you see them start, you can tell that they're. Quote Charlie Daniels, you know, they don't know whether their ass is on fire or their head's catching, but, you know, they start quoting the Bible. That's an act of extreme desperation. It's like, I need to appeal to some different people here, you know, so they're going to jump in. Whereas those of us who serve Christ and serve God, that's our first response. The Bible says, it's not a last resort. And, they started talking about sending him to jail, and he starts quoting the Bible. It's like, that's false.
Well, so kind of at the root of this, you know, and I agree with you guys that this guy has no care for, you know, the real Americans that are there in Denver and the surrounding areas, or for that matter, all of Colorado or the whole nation, because he wants those people replaced with. With people that are more in line with his thinking. And I know we've said it before, but you think about these people that are coming from places like Venezuela, they live in a socialist government, and that's what they know. And that's what he wants. He wants Denver to be, he wants Colorado to be the People's Republic of Colorado, right? And in order to get that, you have to have people that are in line with that philosophy. So the good red-blooded Denverites and Coloradans, they got to go. Or they have to be the minority so that their voice isn't heard. And that's really what's at the heart of this. You know, this guy is nothing, just a bastard that wants to replace us with his kind of citizen. And it's not us. We're not his kind of citizens, so we're less than people. And I think that's really what this is about.
Yeah. Yeah, and I to go right along with what you're saying, Will, I boil that down to the root of the problem with this immigrant thing, with all these banana republics and everybody sending their people up here, or, you know, emptying them out. It's not a reform mechanism. It's not a escape mechanism. It's an export of ideology. And that's yes. What it is. They send these people up here. You know, like a pastor said this years ago, there's no place left to go. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. So if we don't like what's going on here in our country, we change it. That's what this program is about. We want to effect change for the kingdom of Jesus Christ. And that's what we're trying to get people to see and people to understand, is this is the way God does it. They're up here trying to bring about an export of theology and ideology of what they want to see. And it's not in line with the godly people, you know, and whether they're elected, whether they were riding a bus in an illegal alien or whatever, that's the point. They could have stayed in their country and effected change there, so it would be like our country. They didn't come Amen. Here because our country's the way it is. They came here to make our country like their country, you know. It's like, yep.
And what you just described so eloquently, Tim, and, you know, when Jason brings it up from time to time of how there were certain people within this country that lost their mind when the white South Africans showed up, because that's the wrong kind of immigrant. Well, it's because that's the antithesis of what you're describing. Those are people that are coming here that are God-fearing, hardworking people that are coming to be a part of this country and to make it better. And you can't have that. Because it's not making it's not remaking the nation in the image that they wanted. And that's why they were so ticked off that those people were coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. So, Ah. Tim, I know you've kept up, Tim, with some of the EPA stuff that's changing with everything from greenhouse gases to gas cans. I think that's more good news that gets buried in all of this other nonsense. What do you know about that, Tim?
Well, I think it's really interesting that the EPA has just come out and officially confirmed the existence of geoengineering programs. And there's quite a laundry list of them tracking private actors that are engaged in geoengineering, some of them actually illegally. I mean, we're talking undisclosed corporate or international programs. Given what we were just talking about, I can't imagine that they'd really want to hurt anything here if that's satire. But, you know, and we have, we've talked about the chemtrails, and for years, you know, you were a tinfoil hat wearing idiot if you mentioned that. But they're saying, no, it's actually happening. It's going on. And to that we say, well, we identify as I told you so. I mean, it's like, you know, we're at the rate we're going, we're going to run out of conspiracy theories because they just keep making them facts. But one of the other ones that I thought was interesting regarding this was Trump did a little quote there the other day talking about the AI thing and the power thing we were talking about earlier. He said, well, we've basically deregulated power production to the point that probably any piece of dirt that's bare, they could build a power plant in if they want to. So, you know, the EPA is definitely getting its horn sawed off, which is a good start. They just deregulated. I don't know if anybody else gets this. It's just a pet peeve of mine. You know, try to buy a good gas can that doesn't require a PhD to run. And I like the fact that, you know, these new ones, they say, well, they keep gas from spilling. And it's like, then why am I wearing it all? You know, trying to fill your lawnmower up and you got to, you know, hold this, do that. I need another set of arms here to make this thing work.
Well, I know. And then these new gas cans, they actually, I don't know if you guys have tried them or not, but I've been buying them as gas cans. They're red, yellow, green, blue, and they got them at Tractor Supply, and they got them at Murdoch's and all the farm and ranch stores. But they're not – it's technically illegal to use it as a gas can. It's sold for waste fluids or something like that, whatever it is. I can't remember. But I'll tell you what, they are phenomenal, and they actually did a really good job on them. And they're heavy duty, and I think it's great. But it's not a gas can. It's not a diesel can, and you're not supposed to put diesel in it. You're not supposed to put gas on it. I bought another one the other day, a small, you know, like a 2.5 gallon one, because I wanted to mix 2.5 gallons. Mixed gas up the other day, and was talking with a guy there, and he's like, this is the best thing that they've come up with. And I told him, I said, yeah, and I said, and you're not supposed to use it for a gas can. And he looked at me and he's like, what? And I said, yeah, read the label. And he's like I never noticed that. He's like, they finally come out with something. And I'm like, yeah, anytime. He's like, how hard was it to screw up a gas can? And I said, well, you get the government involved in anything, they'll screw it up. And, you know, got him thinking, at least. Those gas cans that they came out with, oh, that was something that just irritated me. I mean, you can't have a vent on it. You can't have this on it. You got to have it spring-loaded where it automatically shuts off. I mean, has anybody had one of those gas cans with a spring-loaded shut-off thing that have worked for more than, you know, 3 or 4 times, if that?
They
don't work. And they're expensive. You know, a gas can used to be cheap. Now, I mean, you're talking 30, 40 bucks.
Yeah. One of my go-to items at yard sales has always been like old gas cans. And I don't mean plastic, I mean metal ones.
Yeah.
If I'm walking around, my eyes are peeled for old gas cans. That's because they work and they hold up. And anyways, sorry, Tim, I cut you off.
No, that's okay. As of July 23rd, the EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin came out, and they've now deregulated gas cans. So there's no regulations on gas cans.
Oh, really?
Longer. They can yeah, they can make the old style now and
make gas cans great again.
I love it, Jason.
It's a small victory, but it's definitely, to me, it's like, oh my goodness. I mean, because, you know, we use them every day. I mean, it's like, and it got so bad for us that we were buying these aftermarket spout kits, you know, and in some cases we literally had to modify the can to put a bin in it or whatever, but it was like, nah, we're not, you know, so, and like you said, it just adds to the price of the can, but in order to have good gas cans, that's what we had to do. So now maybe we...
Let's hope this is a seed. Today it's gas cans that work. Maybe tomorrow it'll be DEF systems on diesels. Maybe those will go away too.
I hope so. Oh, yeah, man.
I think that's coming. I mean, from what I hear.
I do too, Tim. I do too. Yeah, I think so too.
As you said, that DEF systems, it's like they are a DEF system, but they're a death system for diesels. I mean, it's talking about,
absolutely,
you know, killing a diesel motor, putting that much, the parts. I could not believe a friend of mine did a delete on it was a 2013 Dodge, and pulled all the stuff that didn't need to be on there off of there, and it filled the bed of the pickup truck up, and there was enough parts there that it's like to build another motor. I mean, it's like if you're looking at it, I mean it's like. I didn't realize, and I'm sitting there talking with the mechanic that was doing the work, and it's like, I'm like, seriously? I'm like, all this stuff had to come off? And he's like, yeah. And I was like, no wonder this thing wouldn't run. I mean, it's...
yeah. Well, and think of the front end cost it adds to that vehicle. Parts, if you have to buy them for replacement parts, are expensive. I mean,
well, there was at least $10,000 worth of stuff that was pulled off of that motor.
Yeah, it's just insane. And the other thing that always astounds me is that I get mileage out of that because I talk to guys and I'm like, you know what DEF's made out of? And really, a lot of people don't. I think I've said it before here, but they make it out of pig urine. That's what it is. It's refined pig urine that you're dumping in there, and they're breeding hogs to increase their urine output for that so that they could catch it and, you know, make money off of it. And I just, you know, I was sitting there one day thinking about it, like, walking around one and it's doing a regen or whatever and sitting there and you wonder what that ammonia smell is. And you think that makes God proud of us that we're walking around in a cloud of pig urine, you know, I mean, it's like, I just, you know, the whole thing, you read some of the Bible rules and stuff about that kind of stuff. I don't think.
Well, it's pollute. Yeah, it's polluting the land. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean,
it makes the Talmudists proud.
Yes.
Yeah. That they've you know, ruined an entire industry. I mean, you stop and think about the guys that drive diesel trucks, and you know, typically, I'm going to say they're real Americans. I don't know of a better way of saying that. And what a better way to subvertly attack those people without them being known or without them knowing. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm looking too deep into that.
Making you. Well, I don't think so. I mean, I think there's plans within plans. And I think that goes back to that. And they've got you paying out good money for something that you ordinarily, I mean, you know, somebody come up and wanted to sell you a couple gallons of that stuff, you'd be like, well, I don't want it, you know, but they're making you pay for it.
You know, and I think that would something, I mean, you start talk about making changes in an industry. If we can get rid of that death system, and, you know, get rid of these camel jockeys that are driving the trucks, and you know, that could be a once again good industry. People, I remember talking with Pastor Peters, and he talked about he had his dad drove a truck for a while, and he had uncles that drove trucks. He had you know, there was several people in his family that's what they were truck drivers. And they were professional about it. They had uniforms. They dressed nice. It's not what you see when you go to a truck stop now. It wasn't all foreigners. And we're just seeing more and more of that going up up and down I-80, down across I-25. I mean, you pull into any of those truck stops, it's like a third world country. And it's just
it does.
I mean, and you go into those truck stops, it stinks. It's like when you're traveling, it's like places that you wouldn't want your wife and your children to go into is a truck stop. I mean, it's just absolutely horrible. But they've destroyed that industry. It was an industry that used to be a respectable profession, and people were proud, and it wasn't that long ago, they were proud of being a truck driver, you know, and they took it serious, and, you know, they kept their trucks clean, they, you know, it was a trade that, that they did with pride, and there was no, it wasn't anything to be looked down upon. Now you've got, go ahead.
No, one thing I was going to say is just, you know, growing up, just some personal experience and knowing guys that were truck drivers by trade. Like you said, Jason, I don't really know where I heard this from, but they were kind of the knights of the highway. Because
right.
I don't know how many times I've heard the story or seen it with my own two eyes of it was very common for a guy driving a big rig. If there was a lady broke down with a flat tire, they're stopping. They're going to stop and help. I mean, they were kind of caretakers and guardians of the highway. And I don't really think I'm being too romantic about that. I mean, I really believe that that's the way it was. And, now, you know, I just recently got back from Atlanta. I had to go over there for a few days, and it was my first, experience in a big city on the interstate with what we've been talking about with these truck drivers. And I started paying attention and, man, I was on three different interstates in the metro Atlanta area, and I didn't see one white guy behind the wheel of a big truck. It was and they were all driving like maniacs. It was just insane. And what you were talking about with the truck stops, I had this very thought of that is the not that they ever would, but that would be the last guy I would want to stop and help one of my women out with. Anyways.
Well, and I was going to say the exact same thing as the kid. I mean, being exposed to that reality, they called themselves the White Knights of the Highway, and they conducted themselves accordingly. I mean, you know,
that's exactly right.
It was a higher calling, and they considered them. You didn't drive by people that were having problems. You didn't. You were courteous. Now you break down on the side of the road to help you. You'll be lucky if they don't run over you. You know, it's like
that's right.
So. Yeah, we've definitely have had a shift in, and it can be related to the demographic. So, and, you know, the government regulations have driven all of the, basically, if you're much over about 45 or 50 years old, you can't drive because they're so worried that you're going to have, I don't know, heart failure or something else. And that's the other thing is the median age of truck drivers has just come way down into the 20s or 30s, you know, age-wise. And when you look at the accidents and you look at the poor driving and all the things that are going on, I'm not saying that young people can't drive or younger people can't drive, but it's just there's such a total lack of any care, you know. And so it's something that needs to change there. I mean, there's definitely been a real pull down as a nation on that.
I think that's just another American institution. You know, if you look across that whole culture, going back to the CB culture in the 70s, and, you know, we had a whole genre of music that came about, you know, truck driving music, and it really went all across the world, you know, into Europe and places. Those guys, it was a very popular, it was like, you know, the Westerns and Cowboys is the American truck driver was kind of a folk hero that went all across the world. And now it's more of a, I don't know. I don't know what you would call it now, but those days are long gone, and it's no fault of the truck drivers. That's for doggone sure.
Yeah. Crowded them out.
Yep.
Well, and they were even tied to that. And one of the other things on the EPA is the EPA is removing greenhouse gases from the list of dangerous pollutants. So kind of jump back to that. But you know, carbon dioxide from burning fossil fuels and a lot of those kind of things that and even background gases that were illegal that were already in the air, you know, so we're seeing they're basically walking back a whole bunch of the Clean Air Act standards, which includes lawnmowers and chainsaws. We talk about gas jugs, but a lot of our industrial tools have been really destroyed, you know. So they're so safe you can't use them. I mean, it's like, we've got some of these, you know, they're talking about walking back some of the fuel efficiency standards. And I thought that was to me, the fuel efficiency standards have been a joke for a long time because we've seen this requirement, but we didn't see any actual outcome. I mean, basically, if you look at fuel efficiency, the reality of what we have today isn't much different than what we had 30 years ago. But my, we sure have spent a lot of money on it to make it quote unquote better. So
that's right.
There's, you know, but anyways, so that's that's on its way, and it's probably a good thing, you know. So that's the way I look at it.
I heard that Mount Rainier made some pretty good seismic activity this last week. Also, they said that it was some of the biggest powerful swarms. Is that what they call them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was thinking about that when you were talking about Matthew 24 earlier, Jason, about the earthquakes. I'm sorry, Tim. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead, Will. You're doing great.
Yeah, no, I wasn't familiar with that earthquake swarm terminology, but yeah, they're saying that I guess this is the most powerful swarm they've ever had recorded around Mount Rainier, and it's far reaching as far as the seismic activity. I don't pretend to know a lot about this as far as geologically what happens, but they're recording pretty powerful earthquakes a mile underground. That's how much it's rumbling. So you think about that, 1 mile under the surface of the earth, they're recording like 2.2 earthquakes and that sort of thing. And it just seems like there's a lot of rumbling, you know. And I look at it as in my simple mind of it's kind of like a dog that barks before he bites. You know, and that sure seems like what's happening.
That's what I thought, too. And they said that it is one of the most dangerous volcanoes out there. And it's acting up and it's making, you know, breaking all these records. But don't worry about it. Well, you know, everything's fine. There's no danger. It's like.
Nothing to see here. Okay. Nothing to see here. Yeah.
Well, and Mount St. Helens is under a. You know, an eruption watch right now, which is kind of one of those, which Mount St. Helens and Rainier are somewhat tied together, I guess, fault line wise. But they've got, they're having, I don't know what they call that. I may not have the right word, but outswellings on the side. You know, they using satellite imagery and stuff, they can see when the mountain swells in one spot. And there's a whole bunch of, major stuff going on there. I mean, it's on an elevated watch list right now. So,
well, and they're not that far apart, Mount Rainier and Mount St. Helens. I mean, it's like as a crow flies, I think if you could drive a straight line through there, I think they're, you know, only, what, an hour apart or something like that. I know that, you know, when you're driving from one to the other, it's quite a drive because you got to almost make a circle to get from one to the other. But they're actually pretty close to each other.
You know, I had a terrible thought as you said that, Jason, of can you imagine both of those going at the same time?
Oh, man. I know. Well, that's what I was thinking about. If you're talking about this stuff going on a mile underneath them, that's not that far away. I mean, it's pretty close to each other.
Yeah. Well, and then on the other end of the country, New Jersey's having a bunch of microquakes, which is really, really significantly unusual because that area out there basically is on a, what do you want to call it, granite plate, but they're having earthquakes out there. So, yeah, I don't know if there's any significance or any tie-ins, but coast to coast, it's kind of a, you know, God's definitely talking. I mean, it falls into prophetic watch list stuff as far as I'm concerned. I mean, see it. So, but yeah, Mount Rainier has had over like 800 microquakes in the last, not very long, just weeks, literally. So, Monday morning, they had 7 recorded by 8 a.m. So, they may not be very big. I mean, little earthquake, when the earthquakes, a little quake is still pretty big. So, there's definitely something to keep an eye on. So, yeah, so far, everything about this swarm is consistent with typical hydrothermal activity, they're saying. But, my thinking on that is, so why wasn't it doing that 2 years ago? Because it wasn't. But it's just typical. Doesn't typical mean it happens routinely? I mean, if they've been doing that for 10 years, okay. But the numbers are much higher in the last, you know, month or so. So it's, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Well, and we didn't get a chance to talk about it this week very much or at all, but prepper tip of the week, looking at the clock, we need to move on. Any ideas?
Tim, go for it.
Well, my thinking was is there's a lot of trades that you can – we talked about trades here and skill sets, and there's – so many that can be traded for the reality of survival or of continuation and that benefit you. And I had, there were 25 of them that they were talking about that I thought were pretty good, but, you know, just to kind of pick and choose a few, communication, construction, cooking. You know, a lot of times we don't think about cooking, but cooking without power is not a, it's not a real simple thing. We've talked about the power issue there. It might be a good idea to maybe do some practice. If you can cook a good meal that way, you'd be surprised what people would trade or be willing to trade you for just a good home-cooked meal. I mean, that's a very real skill set that we kind of take for granted, you know. Plumbing, renewable energy, just gunsmithing is another one that they have listed, and gardening, obviously, first aid. And we've talked about, and another one to my way of thinking that they listed plumbing, but it was one of those I was like, you know, we don't talk about that very often, but in the event of societal or incremental collapse, people don't a lot of times think about waste removal or containment or anything else. And that's a real issue as far as being able to handle that, learning how to deal with those situations in a way that keeps you safe from disease and from those sort of things. So beekeeping's another one. We talked about that just earlier about the honey and the help it is. You know, you're not going to go down to the store and buy sugar. So, you know, if you want to cook with things, it might be necessary to have some of that. Brewing and distilling. There's alcohol is a disinfectant base for herbal tinctures. It's also very useful for bartering. you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff. Making clothing. Communication, we've talked about ham radio on here many times over the years, different things, but communication becomes a real problem. I mean, smoke signals only go so far, so you might need, and your phone, regardless of how well charged up it is going to be more or less a brick if you have a infrastructure failure. So there's that. Yeah, those are some of the things I came up with.
No, I think that's really all very, very good stuff. You know, yeah.
I like I was just going to say, Jason, I like the justification of all the time that I spend outside at the barbecue pit. I'm actually just prepping.
Well, when he was saying that, it's like, and it can be complicated if you don't have, and it's like something you wouldn't want to just jump into. And, you know, Will, when you started learning how to barbecue, did you just know how to cook barbecue? That's something that actually took you a long time, and you're still you're still working on perfecting it. You're always trying to do better, but it's something that, you're not going to be able to cook a brisket or something like that, or cook barbecue food, and just know how to do it. It is ongoing, and without some of the proper tools. I mean, the other thing is I really like a Dutch oven. It's like those are very simple to use. You can feed a lot of people out of them if you got a big one. Dutch ovens to me are one of the easiest ways to cook outside. You can throw it in the fire. You can throw coals on top of it. You can cook anything from a dessert to enchiladas in it. I mean, it's pretty amazing. And I don't think I've ever had a bad meal out of a Dutch oven, to tell you the truth. Some better than others, but
kinda like the,
yeah.
It's kind of like the microwave oven of the outdoor cooking world.
When Tim said that, I was thinking the exact same thing. It's like, well, we're going to have to do some prepping this weekend.
That's right. Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, that goes along with what I was just about to say, Jason, is all of these things that Tim was mentioning, they're all great tips. But once again, if you're not doing it, you're not collecting those skills of trial and error and actually putting it to work. And, you know, I think that the mindset of, it may just be learning to cook a brisket, but that's a skill. It's a skill, you know, starting the fire, you know, making the coals, all of that stuff. You know, we've said it, and I guess we'll just be a broken record and say it again, is you don't want to learn to do that stuff when you need to do it. You know, practice makes perfect, and we should all be doing more things outside and practicing what we preach. That's what I think.
At this point, it's fun to learn it. And when you absolutely need it, it's not going to be fun. You know, you're going to have a whole new level of pressure on you. But if you can learn it now and use it, it'll be fun, and you'll have a good time with it. So
that's right.
If you burn the biscuits in the Dutch oven this time when you're making them, you learned something, and we all had a good laugh. And but when you burn the biscuits and people are starving, that's a problem. So
that's right. And for those folks that still have kids at home, get your children out there with you, because there's no time like now for them to learn those skills together. You can learn it together as a family, refine those skills, and maybe the things you didn't pick up that didn't get passed on to you, generationally speaking, you know, pass those on to your children so they'll get passed on to the generation after that. It's good investment of your time. That's for doggone sure.
Absolutely.
Well, man, I appreciate you being here this morning. And Remnant, I want to thank you for being here as well. We're going to go out with a song. Remember to join us for church. Go to www.scriptures4america.org.
Through faith in God, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are endowed with inalienable rights of life and precious liberty, the pursuit of happiness. On these we now take aim and set our sights. Like sleeping watchmen on the wall, we have failed to heed the signs of usurping foreign powers within our land, letting fraud, deceit, and usury be the curse of these hard times. Now won't you heed this wake-up call and lend a hand and be a part of the solution and restore our Constitution.
Mm-hmm. You are listening to the Scriptures for America Worldwide Broadcasting Network with Pastor Peter J. Peters, made possible by the tithes and offerings of the faithful. If you would like to be one of those who help to get needed truths out to others,